Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 38 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. The B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Why am I giggling to myself alone in this studio? I'm thinking about this morning. This morning, I had an appointment. No, it was not with a potential sponsor, although that's who I would have liked this appointment to have been with. This morning, I had my yearly physical. And I am not being hyperbolic when I say this. My doctor might be the most dull-witted person I've ever met who wears a white lab coat for her profession. Setting the scene, we're in the small room. She's asking me all the normal questions. Do you wear a seatbelt? Do you feel safe at home? Do you have any shortness of breath? And as she's there doing the answers, she's on the keyboard. It hits me. My doctor does not know how to type. How can you be a doctor in the United States in 2024 and not know how to type? This is not my dad who was born in 1950, who didn't grow up with computers and keyboards, and, you know, until he retired in his office job, he used one finger. My doctor, she might be, if I had to estimate, probably late 40s, early 50s. I see her typing. And immediately, I can't trust anything she tells me. I don't know, but there is no way she got her medical license from somewhere in the United States or India. It's clear to me when you're doing this on the keyboard and with the lab coat on that you clearly got your medical license or degree from some island that nobody can point out on the map. And yes, I am criticizing anybody who's not smart enough to go to a U.S. medical school, so they had to go to like the Cayman Islands or the Bahamas and come back and then try to treat people like me and everybody else in America who has terrible health, because this is America after all. I don't have terrible health, but I do have some pain in my body, and I was telling the doctor about it. What does my doctor do? She just presses up against my neck, my throat, my ankles and my feet. And she goes, well, your glands aren't swollen, so keep taking what you're taking. I'll see you next year. And pats me on the back on the way out. And I just leave there going like, what the fuck just happened? Why did I have to pay a $30 copay to get no answers? It's frustrating. I need to find a doctor who knows how to type. So if you're in the New Haven County area and you have a medical professional who could just use all her fingers or all of his fingers, send him or her the B-Man's way, because I need a real doctor. I'm 40. It's no more time to be putting around. I need to have the finger up the asshole in the next few years. I need to find someone who actually knows a thing or two about medicine. And with medicine, I will say this, okay? My doctor was asking me, like, what medications do you take? And I don't really take any medications other than this antidepressant, Cymbalta, which I use for the pain and a little bit of my misophonia. But I do take a lot of vitamins, so those have kind of been on my mind all day. And I started to realize that I'm not very diligent with my vitamin taking. I take a lot of vitamin D, but there are some days I miss. And it's gotten me thinking about all the babes in my past who have told me, don't worry, I'm on birth control. Don't worry, like, where you finish. And now I'm thinking, there's no way any of those ladies took birth control every single day at the same time. How do you babes do it? Please write me down in the comments. Let me know on social media. How do you remember to take that birth control pill every day at the same time for year after day after day, month after month, year after year? That's magic. I know a lot of people say, yeah, we got to have male birth control. No fucking way. You actually think there's a guy out there who will remember to take his birth control pill every morning with breakfast? The fuck out of here. There's no way that would ever happen. If you had to rely on men to take birth control and to prevent, like, any of you from having babies, there would be a population growth like to the moon. Like, we'd have to put people in the moon because there'd be so many unwanted pregnancies. Why am I talking about pregnancies? I've never had a child, nor am I in a position right now where I'm going to get an unwanted pregnancy. That's just my life right now. Let's get into the episode. One more thing before we get into a Reddit post that I'm going to read to you. I edit these episodes, and I am so proud at my reading comprehension skills, because if you go back and look at an earlier episode, let's say the first 10 to, episode 35 plus, my reading aloud, is it aloud or out loud? Let's say aloud. That seems more academia. Aloud. My reading aloud skills, I've made so much progress over the last few months being able to read these posts without stumbling over words or mispronouncing words or that I just want to pat the B-man on the back and say, keep going. And now watch me just stumble all over this one, because this is a long one. This comes from the subreddit Paranormal. Weird childhood experience that gives me the chills to this day. When I was in the 10th grade, I had this close friend. Let's say his name was Michael. Non-original at all. Anyways, Michael confided in me that he had spiritual gifts. He could read auras and could see spirits. I knew he was legit one day when he told me he could see something horrible attached to me. I didn't believe him until he drew me a picture of it, and what he drew really freaked me out. Basically, when I was young, I just starting to struggle with my mental health. I would draw this character that I saw as a representation of my bad thoughts. She was tall, emaciated, skeletal-like figure with holes for eyes, long fingers, and stringy hair. I would draw her all the time until I started to get older and grew out of it. Well, good for you. So you can imagine my surprise when Michael shows me his drawing, the exact creature I had drawn myself countless times, exact to the detail. I had even given her a name in my head, a name which he knew. I am typically a disbeliever in this sort of stuff, but there is simply no way he could have known this. I was very embarrassed and ashamed of my mental health and never told anyone about my character. I did not draw the picture of her anymore, and even if I did, I never allowed any of my friends over so he would have no possible ways of seeing any of my drawings. Michael told me she is attached to me and follows me wherever I went. He said she was an evil energy created by my my bad feelings and thoughts. I don't know how much truth there is there, I've never heard of this. Anyways, I am in my 20s now and still think of this frequently, but I've never really talked about it or asked anyone to make any sense of this. I'm a bit of a skeptic, so I don't know a lot about this stuff. If anyone has any thoughts or information please do. My experience still freaks me out. I must say, I've never had any experiences with the paranormal or ghosts or spirits. I don't disbelieve, nor do I believe in spirits. My code when it comes to the paranormal is live and let live. I don't want to spit. I don't want to the paranormal, like, give them the flip them the bird or give them the stink eye, just because I don't want to mess around if they do exist. As a kid, sometimes you'll walk into like a haunted building. Not me. If the lights are off, I'm not going in. If there's like a light that's just dun, 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 and there's some weird music, I'm not going to go, hey, everybody, let's go down the hallway and see if there's anything freaky in there. I want nothing to do with it because I don't want to be in your position. I don't want to be flipping a ghost the bird and then have him like put his bad aura over me and follow me around, kind of like the situation you find yourself in now. Because once you get a ghost to like follow you, you can't shake him. Like once a ghost is on you, he's on you. Like he's not, it's not like you're Steph Curry where you can like shake him out of his shoes and then take a step back and a jumper. Cause ghosts, they glide. You can't shake when you take steps and you have a spirit that glides. There's no way you can kind of jig that person off of you. Like that spirit is on you for as long as they want to be on you. So this spirit probably is on you. Sorry, not sorry. What you did do right, and what I applaud you for, is when you were a child, I applaud you for not telling any of your friends or classmates about these drawings you were making of this evil spirit and how you kind of turned this spirit that you felt into your imaginary friend. Because if you had told all your classmates about your evil spirit and showed them the drawings you made of your evil spirit, nobody would have eaten lunch with you. All the kids would have slapped the chocolate milk out of your hands, or Doyle rules. I believe that's from the film Happy Gilmore or one of those Adam Sandler movies. It's going to frustrate me that I can't remember which one it was. Yeah, I do believe it was. No. The one where he's a kid. He goes through all the school. I'm getting old. I can't remember the names of movies. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that was the smart decision you've ever made in life is not telling your friends about this evil spirit and showing them the drawings of your skeletal Amy Winehouse type figure that you drew in your notebook. Because we all had, come on, let's be honest. We all had imaginary friends. I had one, and I had, you know, three older sisters and an older brother and lots of friends. But I had an imaginary friend when I was in first grade. I'd play soccer with him every afternoon after school in my front yard. I would, like, you know, kick the ball, get around him, always scored a goal. Now that I think about it, I was a terrible friend to my imaginary friend because I never let my imaginary friend win when we played soccer. I always scored a goal on him when he was goalie. He must have been so frustrated with me. Maybe he's following me now like your spirit is following yours. As for Michael, your friend who could see the spirit, I don't think this is so unusual because energy is a real thing. I was skeptical of energy or people, people having energy. But after living in a city for a little bit, like there is an energy. Like when you go to a densely populated area, metropolitan area, you can feel the energy. You know, when you go to New York City, when you're from the suburbs or rural area, and you go to New York City or LA or Austin or Miami, like you feel like there is an energy. It's not just the people that you feel the rush. There you could feel there's more snap to it. So there people do have an energy to them, and we've all been in the presence of people who have an eerie energy to them. Most of the comics I know who I do comedy with have a little bit of that eeriness to them, especially like the female comics, because I think I'll chop it up with them outside of venue talk, but the fuck if I'm ever going to let a comic with one of that, just I get bad vibes from them. I'm not going to let them in my car, or I'm not going to go in their car because they might take me to a haunted house. I know plenty of comics like that where, hey, can you give me a ride home? Sure. And then you have to stop at some weird house down a dirt road, and who knows what the fuck they're buying or what you're going to end up with. That's why I drive alone to my comedy gigs. So yeah, Michael, I don't think it's particularly fascinating that he was able to pick up on that evil spirit of yours. Now, where he takes it to the extreme is where he uses you as a human Ouija board and was able to actually envision your imaginary spirit to the exact way you drew it. That is a little creepy. Not creepy in like, oh, that guy's creepy. More so in a, like, oh, wow, that's you know, that gives you like a chill down your spine kind of creepiness to it. This is something, though, you're going to have to get used to. Because I say that because there's going to be a lot of Michaels in your life. Because when you just have a bad aura to you, like I've said before, earlier, like, people can sense that. So you're going to have, but people who like that bad, evil, demented, Amy Winehouse type aura to you, like, they're going to be drawn to you. And that's what you got to keep the eye out for. Like, there's a good chance you're not going to marry like a Ryan Gosling type person. Like, with your bad aura, you're probably going to end up marrying somebody who's like plays Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker. That's the type of character you're going to end up falling in love with because you have an evil spirit to you. You're not going to fall in love with the nice guy who works a full-time job and can support your family and doesn't, do anything negative to you, whether it's physically, mentally, verbally. Like, you're going to probably end up marrying someone who's going to be abusive in one of those ways. I don't want that to be the case, but again, when you have an evil spirit that's kind of over your head at all times, like, those are the kind of characters that are going to be drawn to you. So my advice is just be perceptive of that and try to shield those other bad auras away from you. Because if you put two of those together, that can become toxic and can lead to an explosion that will leave you burned and scarred, not so much physically, but it's going to scar your soul and you might not be able to come back from that. So my one more advice, I know I'm rambling a lot with this one, that fucking doctor, how can you not know how to type? So fucking ridiculous. My advice as a doctor or someone who went to a doctor and saw a bad doctor, but think I can be a better doctor, is take lots of vitamin D, exercise, try to sweat out those demons, try to get a lot of sunlight, try to just burn that bad aura off of you. Get those sun rays, get that melatonin in you. Is it melatonin? Whatever it is, like those sun rays, you know, ghosts can't live during the daylight. They need the darkness. So to get lots of light, vitamin D, exercise, sweat it out. And let's get into our next segment after these photos. I have yet another astute question I want to ask all of you. How shall I phrase this one? Is it impolite to go up to a stranger and ask her if she's ovulating? Because there are times when I'll be in public and I'll see a babe with such a glow to her skin that I'm drawn to her. And I want to go up and ask her and go, hey, are you in baby making mode right now? Because your skin is radiating. It resembles an RGB neon light. And I just want to know if you're ovulating or not. Is that bad mannered of me to want to do that? I believe the answer is yes, very much so. But the reason why this is on my mind is because of this next post that I read. And let me bring it to your attention now, if I can open up my phone. This comes from the subreddit Insane People Facebook. Race fetishist angry fanfic over intra-racial couple. This is going to be a heavy one. This bitch wasting her genetics on some random cracker. Imagine the children she would bear with an over 6-foot athlete black man like me. We'd breed the greatest athlete light-skinned children ever. Our son would be named Jalen or Jaden, and he'd rival Steph Curry as a basketball player. Well, where to go with this one? Going in genetics, we're going into race. I will admit, I do approve of eugenics in micro doses. Now, on a broad scale, eugenics tends to lead to malevolent actors who want to rid the world of certain groups of people. See Adolf Hitler as a historical reference for that. But I won't lie. Like every sports fan I know, including myself, has had this exact conversation with their friends. And it goes like this. Well, if LeBron James and Serena Williams reproduced, they would make a person that would have superhero genetics. Like, you got to admit, we've all had that conversation. And that is genetic. That is, eugenics. You know, taking two people, reproduce to make a better person. That is what eugenics is. The problem is when you take that one example and then you insert race, creed, religion, IQ, that's where it gets a little iffy and can lead to genocide. And I'm very, and everyone here at Verbal Graffiti, we're very anti-genocide. Like I said, microdosing. The key is microdosing. Now, when you look at humanity as a whole, eugenics is weird because there are so few beautiful people in the world. Like when you rate people, you know, from just on pure looks, like 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, there are so few nines and tens in this world that they're a commodity. Like if you're a 9 or a 10, you can make money just being a 9 or a 10. That you can make 5 figures monthly just being a beautiful person. And when you think of a 9 or 10, there is science to this. Like we all know that beautiful people have things in common. It's symmetry. It's a strong jawline. It's a high cheekbone. It's that good glowing skin. There are these common traits that beautiful people have. But when you look at the world and you just, wherever you're at in the world, like look at your surroundings, look at the people in your everyday life. There are so many more ugly people than there are beautiful people, which is odd because you would think after, you know, tens of thousands of years of humanity that we would weed out the ugly people because no guy wants to put their seed in an ugly and no woman who is beautiful wants an ugly to put his seed into her. So you would think over time that the uglies would become extinct or at most would be on the endangered species list, but it's actually the opposite that is true. It's the, like I mentioned earlier, it's the beautifuls that are such a rare commodity, that are like gold, that are like Bitcoin, that are like silver, and all these rare traits that you have to dig, or resources that you have to dig up to get. So maybe, where am I going with this? Like, where am I going with this? So he's like, when I see this guy's post, like he's an evil person, but I do understand the sentiment. It's like, hey, you see this beautiful person, and if this guy is who he says he is, you know, a very tall, athletic black man, the race, black, white, Asian, Indian, it doesn't matter, but he's super athletic. He says this lady, he's like, well, hey, if we reproduce, there is a school of thought that's saying the best thing you can do with your family is find, get the person with the best genetics that you can possibly get and reproduce with them. That's a very red pill school of thought. Now, personally, the B-man thinks things like personality, intelligence, manners, like things like that matter just as much, if not more, than just pure physical traits. But I see where this guy's coming from. Where I think he gets it all out of whack is, I mean, he's a narcissist. Just a pure, he thinks he's like Alexander the Great. I mean, he is so, like he's putting himself on such a pedestal. Like he really thinks if he reproduces with this woman in this post, that his child's going to be able to lock up Steph Curry? Like, the fuck he is. Like, if you want to be able to lock up Steph Curry and block his jumper, like, go bareback. What's her name? Caitlin Clark. Like, just random white bitch on Facebook. You ain't going to be locking up any NBA player. So shoot your genetics with a higher athletic genetic person like Caitlin Clark or Serena Williams or Gabby Douglas or I don't know, name whatever superstar female athlete that's out there in the world right now today. I wish I could remember naming that tennis player. But yeah, eugenics, like you gotta admit, like we do, like we, in, man, this is a heavy topic. Like we do dip our toe, at least Americans, in eugenics. Like, you know, if you have a baby, you get pregnant and you find out there are some mental defects to the baby and you abort the baby, like that is eugenics. Like, sorry, you could wrap it up however you want. But if you get rid of a baby because like everything's not formed normally, that's eugenics. We have, you know, when you reproduce, when you choose your girlfriend or your boyfriend, like even before you reproduce, that kind of is eugenics. Like you're picking someone based on their appearance and their personality. That is their, you know, their genetic tree. So that in a way, we're all kind of dancing with eugenics. It's just microdose. That is the key term, microdose eugenics. Broad macrodose on a broad scale, that's where we get like a world war and a world goes to hell in a handbasket. Is that the term, hell in a handbasket or whatever it is? Like eugenics, keep it personalized. Do not try to extend it beyond your own love life. Anywhere beyond that gets dicey. Till next episode, go suck a fat one.